Well, greetings, brethren. I wanted to say something besides good morning. And you wouldn't believe all the rigmarole I went through coming up with that. And brethren includes the sisters because you are fellow heirs, and if God called you fellows, then that makes you brothers. Okay. That only came to me about 10 seconds ago. Okay, so I'm already rearranging. I have this verse written down, and I was sitting there during the break and thinking, I'm not going to use that. And then Alan made it totally relevant. So Isaiah 61:10 says, I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall exult in my God, for he hath clothed me with the garments of salvation. He hath covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decks himself like a priest with a beautiful headdress, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels. Very fitting now. So the one I wanted to start with, intended to start with, is in Psalm 37, 5 and 6. It says, commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will act. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your justice as the noonday, and your justice as the noonday. If God has taught me anything lately, it has been grab a hold and hang on. I am not a debater like Derek was talking about. When other people are talking, my brain gets going and my words just don't come out. And I just don't. That's not my style. And I don't present my thoughts like other people present my thoughts or present their thoughts. And I just, so I'm kind of decided lately, I'm just going to get up here and I'm going to talk to you guys, and hopefully it works. And I pray to God that he will guide my words. All right, so I've been putting off getting my tombstone, and or the driving force behind that is Joy's tombstone, and been putting it off, and it makes me feel bad because Dad's is probably going to get up before Joy's and Marvin's, and you know, it's okay. It's all right, because that's who I am. And so one of the main things that was causing me to delay was I want to put a Bible verse on the back of it instead of Cummings. Like, who cares? It's already on the front of the stone. Who cares if it's on the back of the stone? So I want to put a Bible, I want two Bible verses. I think I finally found them on the tombstone. And I wanted to run them by you. This isn't my lesson. I just want to run them by you and see if it's, you know, every once in a while you see license plates where people, it sounds cool if you read it one way, but if you put the pronunciation in a different way, it sounds like something totally different, and you wish, well, I wish I wouldn't have really put that on my car, but here we are, you know. So anyway, in 2 Samuel 14:14. We must all die. We are like water spilled on the ground. which cannot be gathered up again. But God will not take away life, and He devises means so that the banished one will not remain an outcast. I like this verse because it's very obscure. It's a story where Joab had hired this woman to come before King David and do this story of her. Anyway, it was a fake story, and they were trying to get Absalom, David, to recognize that he needed to bring Absalom back home after banishing him. But anyway, so I like that verse. So that's the first part. And then for the second part, I wanted to do... I wrote this down. Why am I... Okay. John 14 and 6. Jesus said to him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And that's what I want engraved on my tombstone at the moment, I should say. And if you can see any obvious flaws or reasons not to do that, then I would like to know that before I engrave it in granite. Okay? All right. So, next thing on the agenda. I found a podcast. I found a podcast. We'll just leave it at that. It's 307 Project, and this guy's a ex-Navy SEAL, very outspoken, very opinionated, and he actually makes me uncomfortable when I'm listening to him because he is so definite in his beliefs and his presenting of those beliefs. But I really like it. He's Christian. That's why he made 307 stands. I'm not quite sure I got the whole story on why the title, but 3 stands for the Trinity and 7 is the perfect number or something like that. And I haven't... He talks about it sporadically through his podcast and kind of trying to piece together. And I don't know enough about podcasts and stuff, how to listen to them in order. I just seem to... that one pops up. Okay, I'll listen to it. And then I find out it's part 2 of something, you know. Anyway, he had one on baptism, and I'm just cringing because he's in Georgia. I figure he's Baptist, and I was like, do I really want to listen to this? And he's going to pop my image of him and all this stuff. And he starts in on baptism. And he believes almost identically to what we discussed this morning. He has his podcast. All right. He's sitting there in a chair. He has 2 other guys sitting there, and our woman or his wife, or, you know, the people change all the time. And he's sitting there, and Chili is one of the... He's almost always there. And he just rags on Chili constantly. Chili's not his real name. But anyway, he just rags on Chili. He's just like the whipping boy or something, I don't know. But anyway, so Chili asked him, says, "So do you believe baptism is necessary for salvation?" And he goes, "No, I don't believe it's necessary for salvation, but I am not going there." He says, "I definitely believe that God commanded me to be baptized." And everybody, and for the remission of sin, he immediately went to Acts 2:38, is that the right one? And says, and read that on the air, "For the remission of sins." And that morning, he had just baptized two of the guys that were on the podcast. And he says, I'm baptizing anybody I can get a hold of. And it's just, I don't know, it just made my heart so happy because I thought, man, it's going to get stomped on. But it didn't. So anyway, it's funny, the reason I brought Chili up in the first place is because he just rags on Chili. But then 5 minutes later, he'll be just, yeah, Chili is right and boosting him up. And it's just so interesting, their discussions. They go on for an hour and a half, these podcasts are, and they just go back and forth, and they just, like, will rag on each other and then agree with what the other person said and then support it, and it's just really refreshing. I find refreshing because they really go at it, but yet they are not demeaning, except for the tone of voice, perhaps, in their discussion. Okay, enough said. That's what he says at the end. So, all right. With that being said, I've just recently, a couple months ago, I discovered YouTube. And this is my warning to anybody that has a brain like mine. And I found YouTube, and boy, I just went kerplunk, and my feet disappeared, and I was down at the bottom somewhere, feeding off of YouTube, and I was looking at my history, and I'd spend probably a minimum of half hour a day, and on like one Saturday, I spent 4.5 hours on YouTube, and I just, it was just scrolling. I mean, I wouldn't even see anything I was interested in. It was just like, and anyway, so I finally decided after probably a month and a half or so, like, all right, I can't do this. And I got off YouTube. I just deleted it and got off there. And for about 3 days, I was like going through withdrawals. I would literally pick up my phone, and I know YouTube's not on there, but I just practice scrolling. I would go through my photos. I would go through. I still have YouTube Music. I that doesn't do the same thing to my brain. But I was getting on there, and I was just scrolling through, and then I'm like, it's not doing it, and I put it down. And like after 3 days, I was like, okay, I think I'm going to survive this. And then after a week, I'm like, oh, my brain feels so good. I was so wired from YouTube that it was like my brain was on fire or something. Like anxiety was just dribbling out of my ears. And it was like, so anyway, if you're like me, stay away from YouTube or that scrolling thing. I think it's a scrolling thing. Because if you're on your Cassie gets mad at me because she'll be on her phone, and I'm like, what you looking at? What you looking at? And I'll do that to all of you. If you're on your phone, and I'm like, my brain just goes, and if you ever see me around TV, it's worse than that. So, anyway, that's just my shout out to not doing YouTube, I guess. But I mean, that's how I found this 307 project, was through YouTube. I found some really good stuff on there. I got post-it notes all over the place where I took notes. And then finally, that was one of the reasons I got rid of YouTube, was because if I were just to do everything I wrote down, I wouldn't have time for YouTube. And so, okay, getting out of there. And so it's been a good thing. So I don't want to bash YouTube, but my brain feels much better without it. Okay, Psalm 37. I think the timing of this psalm, this is from my friend Dr. Reese, or Mr. Reese, I don't know if he's a doctor, but who did my chronological Bible thing. He put it right after Absalom had taken over Jerusalem, and David had left Jerusalem and been out in the wilderness, and then they had a battle, and Absalom was killed, and David came back to Jerusalem. And that's where he slides this one in there. He says, "Fret not yourself because of evildoers. Be not envious of wrongdoers, for they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will act. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourself over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out..." All right. That didn't sound right. "Fret not yourself over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil devices. Refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not yourself. It tends only to evil, for the evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land. In just a little while, the wicked will be no more. Though you look carefully at his place, he will not be there. But the meek shall inherit the land and delight themselves in abundant peace. The wicked plots against the righteous and gnashes his teeth at him, but the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he sees that his day is coming. The wicked draw the sword and bend their bows to bring down the poor and needy, to slay those whose way is upright. Their sword shall enter their own heart, and their bows shall be broken. Better is the little that the righteous has than the abundance of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The Lord knows the days of the blameless, and their heritage will remain forever. They are not put to shame in evil times. In the days of famine they have abundance, but the wicked will perish. The enemies of the Lord are like the glory of the pastures. They vanish like smoke, they vanish away. The wicked borrows but does not pay back, but the righteous is generous and gives. For those blessed by the Lord shall inherit the land, but those cursed by him shall be cut off. The steps of a man are established by the Lord when he delights in his way. Though he falls, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. I have been young and now am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread. He is ever lending generously, and his children become a blessing. Turn away from evil and do good. So shall you dwell forever. For the Lord loves justice. He will not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever, but the children of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell upon it forever. The mouth of the righteous utters wisdom, and his tongue speaks justice. The law of his God is in his heart, and his steps do not slip. The wicked watches for the righteous and seeks to put him to death. The Lord will not abandon him to his power or let him be condemned when he is brought to trial. Wait for the Lord and keep his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land. You will look on when the wicked are cut off. I have seen the wicked, ruthless man, spreading himself like a green laurel tree. But he passed away, and behold, he was no more. Though I sought him, he could not be found. Mark the blameless, and behold the upright, for there is a future for the man of peace. But transgressors shall be altogether destroyed. The future of the wicked shall be cut off. The salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their stronghold in the time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in Him. So last week, we in class talked about John 7, because a large portion of us weren't here, and so Derek very wisely decided to do something else, and so we discussed that, and it just struck me, when you start reading that chapter, Jesus seems weak and timid and afraid of perhaps what's going on, because they're trying to kill him in Judea. And so he was staying in Galilee. And his brothers were like, well, if you want to be known, then you have to get out there and do stuff. You know, you have to get on social media, or you have to put yourself out there, and you have to succeed at this. Or maybe his brothers, as it says, they didn't believe him, and so they were just trying to get him to go out there and make a fool of himself, and then he would be, they would be justified, and he'd be put in his place. You know, who knows exactly what was their thoughts at that time, but Jesus was the Son of God. He was God. Think of the power he had. Was he going to be afraid of a puny human who was trying to kill him? Was he going to... He knew when his time was, or knew his time when his time wasn't going to be, and he knew it wasn't yet anyway. And so he knew they weren't going to kill him anyway at that moment. So he had nothing to be afraid of. And he had all that power. And he could have just looked sideways at them and they would have vaporized and floated down as the dust they are. And yet Jesus was very meek. Very meek. He had meekness, is what... And that's what I was looking into, was meekness. He had all that power, and he came off as timid and afraid, at least in the first verse. And then later he ends up going there and teaching right in front of the people who were wanting to kill him. And so I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about this 3 of 7 podcast, this, how a Navy SEAL transfers from being a Navy SEAL to civilian life and not killing things that get in his way and just pushing his way through. And how do you become relevant in that? How do you control that great power and skill that you have? And then I was thinking also about you can be very broken and weak and sick and helpless, and yet you still have to submit to God. You still have to submit. And you have to place yourself in a meek position, or humble. Humble is also means almost exactly the same. And as far as I'm concerned, it's exactly the same. That in the Jewish, in Hebrew, there's like 7 words for humble. And I couldn't tell the difference in any of the meanings, really. They all appeared the same to me. I'm not into words in that sense, but anyway. So whether you are a Navy SEAL or whether you are bedridden and on your deathbed, you still have to place yourself in a position of meekness to God, or humility. And so I'm considering that, and I and all of a sudden I understood why Jesus said, Matthew and Luke, why the rich can are barely saved, or like a camel going through the eye of a needle. Because when you're broken and you're lying on your deathbed and there's nothing, you have no power, nothing other than your free will, I guess. It's pretty, I don't want to say it's easy, but you don't have choices to be made that, I mean, yes, you do have choices. But the choices are very limited. And what, at least from a human standpoint, I'm going to say that. From a human standpoint, you don't have choices to make. And God is your hope. So it's a lot easier for poor, broken, weak, sick to submit to God, I would think. And whereas if I'm vibrant and I have skills and I have money and I have clout and political stuff, then I have more choices that I could make. From a human standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint, I don't think you have any more than anybody else. It's just that I think that I have a lot more choices to make, and it's harder for me to be meek and to place myself in that position of meekness. So when I read that verse earlier, commit your way to the Lord and trust in Him, and the last couple years in my life have been really, really different. And I picture this verse, I picture myself about that tall. I'm in the palm of God's hand. And I'm in trouble, okay? Not from God necessarily, but my life is overwhelming me. And so I grab a hold of His little finger, and I wrap myself around that finger, and I know all I have to do is stay there. And what we were talking about this morning, the steps of salvation, and how we're not going to be complete or totally correct by the end of our life. So I'm in that panic mode, and I'm clinging to God's finger. And my leg starts going to sleep. And like, okay, so I'm feeling somewhat secure. So I start looking, why is my leg going to sleep? Well, that's because it's folded up underneath, you know, something else. And so like, all right. So I make some changes and I get that leg straightened up so that blood circulation can come back. And so that's kind of the way I see it. Is I am in this death grip on God, but I may not be totally correct, and I am losing circulation in that limb or something along those lines. And so I can make adjustments and I can reassess my grip and change it so I am in a little better position, a little better grip. I got a better grip on God and I can feel that limb again. I mean, that's the way I'm visualizing this. Or maybe, see, I'm relying on myself there, totally. And then if you read 5 and 6, it says, commit your way to the Lord, trust in Him. That's less than half of that grouping. And then it says, and He will act. He is God. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your justice as the noonday. So maybe in my death grip on God's finger, God reaches down and pulls my leg out from behind the other one or whatever is cutting the circulation off and adjusts me. And that may take years. One of the men on that 3-7 podcast said he had accepted Christ for 27 years before he was baptized. You know, maybe it just takes a while for us to figure things out. All right. That's pretty much my thoughts for this morning. So work on your death grip. Work on holding on to God. There's times where I question, like, my faith. I don't know what I'm questioning exactly, but I'm questioning God in some aspect because I can tell it doesn't make me feel good when I'm questioning. But I know that God is it, and I'm not letting go of Him. I may not understand everything that's going on with it, but I am holding on, and I'm not going to let go. And I know that, and God will work. And you, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to say greetings, brethren, because it is such a relief to come here and to see you, to see this podcast, to see people I have very low expectations for, and they are studying the Bible, and they are figuring out that baptism is important, and that just, it's like, yes, things are going in the right direction, and it's good. So, and you guys are wonderful. Thank you. So we'll offer the invitation this time. We always offer an invitation. So the invitation is for salvation. Invitation is for mainly for salvation. Yes. Mainly for you to take, if you haven't taken advantage of God's salvation, then we want you to do it now. And if it's something else, we want you to do it now. So, as we stand and sing.